It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. The Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. The first one we've got after 4th of July, which in my mind is officially the start of fantasy football season. And we've got one of the best analysts anywhere joining us today for our guest. Cannot wait. Just like I'm so pumped about the MFL 10 League later on, the MFL 10 Draft later on this month. Who wants in? You get to go against Evan and I. We're going to have 12 people in the league, Evan and I, and 10. Is it 10 or 12 people, Evan? I forget.
12,
that's right. Yeah, 12, which means 10 of you get to go against Evan and I, and you get $100 if you can win. Speaking to that, Mike Ivanich, Ross, I need to be in your MFL 10 league because I'm addicted to the MFL format of fantasy football, and I need a fix. Great Feast podcast, by the way. I gave it high marks on iTunes. Proof of entry attached. Mike sent a couple of sponsor confirmations and a screenshot of his iTunes comment. Mike, you are in. Come on down, baby. It's Evan Silva, he of Roto World fame, at Evan Silva on Twitter. It's me, at Ross Tucker NFL. And today, it's a outstanding guest, an oldie but a goodie.
Big Eater of the Week.
I really look forward to these every week. I mean, I get excited every week for the knowledgeable guest that Evan is going to bring on. And it's even better today because we've had this guest on before, and he was excellent. So I know we're going to learn quite a bit over the next 15, 20 minutes, whatever it ends up being. He is J.J. Zachariasen of Number Fire. A lot of you probably all already follow him on Twitter, at Late Round QB. For the new listeners, J.J., can you just give them a little bit of background on you and Number Fire?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we look at sports in a numbers-driven way. Obviously, we have a lot of metrics that look at things. I don't think that, I'm certainly not someone who thinks that you can only look at football in only a metrics way. But it really, some of our advanced metrics that we use can really uncover some really interesting things about a player that then you can go look at some tape and see if it matches. And when it does, then you know that you have something special. So really we call ourselves the consumer money ball is the best way to think of it, where we have metrics, not just with football, but with baseball and basketball as well, to really allow the sports watcher and the sports viewer to have a more interesting look at the game.
And then you in particular, JJ, your Twitter handle is at Late Round Quarterback. And that's kind of one of the things I guess you're known for. I remember talking with you about that last year quite a bit. Were you one of the first people that really started to espouse that theory?
Yeah, I would say that it's less about I was the first person to incorporate it in my fantasy strategy. I was more so the first person to brand it and to take it a step further and actually write words to what everyone has kind of used over the years. It happened back in 2011 to 2012, where 2012 was a big season, or 2011 was that big season where Matthew Stafford went nuts and, Aaron Rodgers went nuts, Drew Brees went nuts. And then going into that 2012 season, everyone was drafting quarterbacks early. And I realized that, everyone was using the phrase that, it's a pass first league, so therefore I need a quarterback. But really, it was a pass first league for everyone, not just the elite quarterbacks. I mean, Mark Sanchez was putting up huge numbers even in 2011. The lower tiered quarterbacks were performing just as well and getting just as much of a boost as those higher end quarterbacks. And since then, I think it's just slowly become more of an accepted practice, just with more logic and more research being done in fantasy football in general. So that's definitely been a help.
Yeah, that's. I got two more questions on it. That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, I feel like everybody, everywhere, is saying, go late round quarterback, go late round quarterback, go late round quarterback. I mean, everybody's saying that. Is there a point or a place where you say, well, wait a minute, maybe if everybody's zigging, there's a reason to zag?
Yeah. So I think that a really important thing is that drafting your quarterback late and going with this late quarterback strategy, it's not a game of chicken. You know, I'll be in the draft with other analysts and experts, and I won't be the last person to draft a quarterback, and people will then tell me, you know, they'll celebrate that they drafted their quarterback after the guy who wrote a book on drafting quarterbacks late. But it's really not about that. It's really about value. And the reason this whole strategy exists and that it works is that you're only starting one quarterback in your fantasy league, so the demand for that position is a lot lower, while the supply is just growing and growing. I mean, we have guys like Blake Bortles coming out of nowhere last season, and players like that happen every single season. So, you know, it's more so sound. It's more so baked in sound basic economics than anything else. So realistically, yes, there is a point in time where a guy like Andrew Luck, a guy like Aaron Rodgers are valuable. The problem is that it never works out that way where, you know, Aaron Rodgers is sitting there in, say, the eighth round, and I'll snag him, of course, but really he's still going in the fourth round in expert leagues, fifth round in expert leagues, or even earlier in more casual leagues. And I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that people want real football to translate to fantasy football more than it actually does, and they want these quarterbacks to be just as important in real football as they are in fantasy football, but that's just not the case.
And then my last question before I let Evan dive in for a little bit or for a lot of bit is, you know, one of the things I respect about you is when you have a strong argument that you make, you look at the counterpoint and you have your own counter to that thought. What's the strongest argument against late round quarterback? What's the strongest argument someone can make against the philosophy that you've kind of branded and popularized?
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said about having consistency at the position. And we do know that going into a season, of all the positions in fantasy football, quarterback is going to be the easiest to predict. Now, I tend to look at it in the opposite way, where if it is easier to predict, then you know that you can get guys late and you can predict their production. So in a worst-case scenario, you can hit the waiver wire and start streaming your quarterbacks. But at the same time, I know that that's a very uncomfortable thing for fantasy owners to do and want to do. Like, it's not very comfortable starting Geno Smith against the Packers in week two a couple years ago or something like that, because it's Geno Smith. And you know, you see him and what he does in the football field, versus you don't realize that he can still produce from a fantasy perspective. So really, I think that the case for more of an early round quarterback drafter would be the comfort and the consistency from an Aaron Rodgers, from an Andrew Luck. It just so happens that, you know, last year was kind of an outlier where both of those guys didn't have the seasons that everyone thought that they would. But, you know, generally speaking, they are going to be more predictable from average draft position to postseason result.
All you, Evan.
Yeah, actually, Jonathan Bales, I think it was last offseason, came out and wrote an article about taking a quarterback early, and his main points were what JJ discussed. Jonathan Bales, of course, one of the smartest fantasy analysts that there is, one of the best sports analysts that there is. JJ, so I'm going to hit you with some questions about specific players, and then later some ideas, maybe just on offenses and how you envision them working out this year. I know that you love Marvin Jones, who I understand the love for, because, you know, if you project targets for players in the Lions offense, I mean, he's got a really good target projection. And I don't think anybody really envisions the Lions having a consistent running game this year, especially after how last year went. Can you kind of sell me on Marvin Jones right now?
I hope. I'll do my best. You and I have talked about this before. I don't want you to get this wrong or anyone to get this wrong. I think that Golden Tate should still ball out this year, because he has a role in that offense, a very specific one that is very important to that offense. But I think that this is more of a cost thing for me with the Golden Tate and Marvin Jones thing. I mean, according to fantasyfootballcalculator.com and PPR leagues, Golden Tate's going at the end of the third, or at the end of the third and the beginning of the fourth round, while Marvin Jones is going in the middle of the eighth round. And that just seems like a very, very large gap. I mean, if we look back in the Matthew Stafford post-injury-prone days, because you remember everyone thought that he was so injury-prone when he first entered the NFL, the Lions haven't had a drop back to pass ratio that's been less than 1.48 since then over the last 5 years. And we've seen them approach the 2.00 mark three times in those 5 years. So just for some context, only three teams since the turn of the century have had a drop back to run ratio of two. And that's basically what the Lions have approached three times in the last five seasons. So we know they're going to pass, which means, like you said, Evan, if Marvin Jones sees between 17 to 20% of the team's targets, which is pretty likely because there's not a lot of weapons in that offense, he's easily going to exceed 100 targets. And that's more than likely a floor for Marvin Jones. But then there's the idea that they don't really have a guy that's stretching the field, and they don't have a guy that's taking more of those intermediate routes, which, sure, Eric Ebron will certainly be there, but there's no one on the outside. So I think that, you know, combining that, then you know that Marvin Jones is going to have more of that higher average depth of target than what we see from Golden Tate, which will bring up, you know, if he doesn't see the volume that Golden Tate does, he'll make up for it a little bit with a higher depth of target and hopefully more yards. But then there's this other idea that they don't really have a red zone threat. I mean, of course they have Eric Ebron, but if you go back to Eric Ebron in college, Eric Ebron didn't convert a lot of his targets into touchdowns. It's just not what he's done. I think that he should take a nice jump this season, don't get me wrong, because he is a big body. He is a talent. But Marvin Jones, over the last three seasons among qualified receivers, has the best touchdown per target rate in the end in the red zone, aside from Tyler Eifert, Julius Thomas, Allen Robinson, Rob Gronkowski, and Dez Bryant. Those five guys, that's it. Those are the only guys. So I'm not saying that Marvin Jones is going to automatically translate and be this Allen Robinson in the red zone. But at the same time, I don't think that we can just simply discount what he can do in the red zone and the fact that the Lions don't have other red zone receivers. You know, Golden Tate, they designed a lot of plays close to the end zone for him. I mean, four of his six touchdowns last year were from 2 yards or fewer out. And you can look, I mean, they're throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage just to get him the ball in, you know, close to the end zone. But, you know, I don't think that he has this 9-10 plus touchdown upside, whereas Marvin Jones has scored 10 touchdowns in the season. We've already seen that, and touchdowns matter a lot in fantasy football. So combining all of that, I think that Marvin Jones, just from a value perspective, is a better value than Golden Tate. Whereas, I do think that Golden Tate's going to outscore him, but I don't think that we should be shocked if Marvin Jones comes close.
It's really a good argument. I mean, I think that was a great argument. I think that Eric Ebron, as you mentioned, didn't score a lot of touchdowns in college, has yet to in the NFL, isn't really he's not a red zone dominator like Gronkowski. He's not 6'6", 270. You know, he's 6'2", 255. You know, and right. Like you mentioned, I think Golden Tate's career high for touchdowns is like seven or something like right. that. So, yeah, I mean, like, it really shouldn't really surprise cool anyone point, if Marvin Jones scores nine touchdowns. You know, maybe he could be sort of this year's Allen Hurns to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Kirk Cousins is a guy that is a little bit polarizing, and I think the reasons why are obvious. You know, the sample size is small. A lot of people were down on him early in his career. His decision-making going back to Michigan State has always been shaky. You know, and that's why he was a fourth-round pick. But you love him in fantasy. I have really come to love him in fantasy. I know Sig Bloom loves him in fantasy. I went on Chris Harris's podcast the other day. Chris Harris does not like Kirk Cousins in fantasy. M-Dub, Matt Williamson, is not that big on him in fantasy. So kind of a polarizing guy this year, and I think it's for good reason. Can you sell me on Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, so the thing with drafting your quarterback slate, that's, you know, it's more game theory related, in that your goal shouldn't necessarily to just find a guy who can barely outperform his cost. You know, if you're drafting the 14th quarterback off the board and you think that he's going to finish as the 10th best quarterback and he doesn't have that high of a ceiling, that's not worth it. Whereas with Kirk Cousins, we kind of know that he has a high ceiling. I mean, even last season, towards the end of the year, week 14 through 16, the biggest weeks in fantasy, it just happened to be, he was the 7th, 2nd, and 1st ranked quarterback in terms of weekly performances. And of his final 9 games, 6 of them were top 10 quarterback performances. And just to give you some perspective on that, only 14 quarterbacks had 6 top 12 performances over the entire season last year, whereas Kirk Cousins essentially did that in his final 9 games. And what's really, really interesting about those numbers is that they almost perfectly align with DeSean Jackson's health. I think that DeSean Jackson is a huge, huge factor for them. You look at what DeSean Jackson has done in offenses. It's pretty crazy. Just him being on the field is really, really big. I mean, Kirk Cousins' average yards per attempt rose 1.3 yards when Deshaun Jackson was healthy last season. And then the other thing with Kirk Cousins is, you know, you obviously want touchdowns from your quarterback because nothing correlates stronger to weekly fantasy output than touchdowns. You know, he did have sort of high red zone numbers last year, but they weren't as outlier-ish as Blake Bortles had, let's say. And at the end of the day, you have pretty good weapons. You have one of the best red zone weapons in Jordan Reed, as long as he can stay healthy. And they don't have a running game that you should feel very, very confident in, especially close to the end zone. And they'll run those random bootlegs with Cousins whenever he gets close. Maybe he can rush for three or four touchdowns on the ground as well. I think that the one concerning part is that he did have a 5.3% touchdown rate last season. And the average over the last 5 years among quarterbacks has been 4.5%. So you might see a little regression there. But at the same time, if you look back at what Kirk Cousins has done both in college and in the NFL, he usually has a pretty high touchdown rate. So I'm not all that concerned about that regression there. So I think it all comes together with the red zone weapons, with Deshaun Jackson being healthy, with him Kirk Cousins being a decent red zone quarterback. I think all of that comes together, and it makes him kind of the perfect late-round quarterback, because there's ambiguity in terms of what his ceiling could be, but that ceiling could be a top-five option.
The weapons are just nasty. The schedule is great. You got the contract year narrative. You know, he's hot. Kirk Cousins right now is hot. What do you think about the Raiders passing game? Because it seems like people are really aggressively drafting members of this passing game. And when I look at the Raiders, you know, I think their defense could be really friggin' good. And I think Bill Musgrave's history, he likes to play power football. You know, and I think the game flow is not necessarily going to support a lot of fantasy stats. What do you think of, you know, Amari Cooper, where he's going? What do you think of Michael Crabtree? It feels like he started to creep up. I've seen him go fifth round in some MFL 10s recently. They got Clive Walford. What do you, Derek Carr, your boy, what do you think of the Raiders passing game this year and, you know, relative to their ADPs?
Yeah, just to be clear, you're very sarcastic with the Derek Carr being my boy piece. But he, you know, I think that there's going to be regression with Carr. And I don't say that in terms of he can't progress as a quarterback. I mean, mostly in terms of what shows up in the stat sheet, because those are two very, very different things. The same thing with Blake Bortles, you know, where he could throw 28 touchdowns instead of 35 touchdowns or 26 touchdowns and still be a better quarterback, a more efficient quarterback. I see that with Derek Carr. Last season, he had a 5.6% touchdown rate. If you do some regression analysis based on what you would expect the difference in touchdown rate to be if a player had a 5.6% touchdown rate like Derek Carr did, you're looking more at a 4.94% touchdown rate, which is still above average, but it's certainly not what he did last season. You saw a pretty big drop-off last year when Amari Cooper was a little unhealthy. But I think, like you said, Evan, the Raiders' defense is really shaping up to be one of the better units, one of the sleeper units, even in fantasy, of 2016. And anytime you get a defense that's going to be able to stop offenses, that's going to give you positive game scripts. And when there's positive game scripts, you're not going to have as much volume. Now, hopefully that leads to a little bit more efficiency within the passing game. But at the same time, guys like Crabtree and Amari Cooper are going to need that volume to really live up to their ADP. I think Amari Cooper is more of a third-round wide receiver rather than a second-round one where folks are drafting him. I really, really wish that they had better running back play. Latavius Murray has been one of the most inefficient backs over the last couple seasons. Really, last year he was pretty dreadful. But again, that offensive line is going to be massively improved. So really, if you look at the way they built this offseason, they built to be a team that hopefully can run the ball, because they're going to be able to be in those positive game scripts due to that defense. And I think all of that just kind of builds up to make that passing attack less attractive in fantasy football.
I think we both agree on Kirk Cousins, of course. Tyrod Taylor is my highest-owned quarterback right now in MFL 10s. Can you give me, besides those two, some late-round quarterbacks that you like this year in any kind of fantasy?
Yeah, I think Matt Ryan is in a really, really interesting spot, which is, he's not a guy that I generally target ever. I trashed him a lot last year just because of where his ADP was. But, last season, his ADP was in the higher single digit rounds. And now he's back in the 14th, 15th, sometimes undrafted. And I like him a lot, too, if you're playing in two quarterback leagues, because he's going to give you that nice floor. He doesn't have the same type of ceiling that Kirk Cousins does, simply because, we've seen a very large sample size of Matt Ryan, and he's never been higher than, I think, a QB7 in fantasy football. So, his ceiling isn't necessarily a top five quarterback, which is why I'm more inclined to take him more in a best ball format or a two quarterback league format, just because of that floor. But the main reason to really love Matt Ryan, I think, is because he should have had a lot more. He should have thrown for a lot more touchdowns last year. And I say that, obviously his red zone performance was lacking a bit. But he only had a 3.4% touchdown rate, which I know I keep going back to touchdown rate, but it's a really interesting way to find late-round quarterback value, because touchdowns can oftentimes be a little bit random. And if you know that there's going to be regression or progression within that statistic, and touchdowns matter so much in fantasy football, that's where you can find some of those late-round gems. So that same study I did with the regression, he had a 3.4% touchdown rate. Over the last 5 years, quarterbacks who have had touchdown rates around that number, they've risen to about 4.3%, which is still under his career average of 4.5%. But even with a 4.3% touchdown rate, you're looking at five more passing touchdowns than he had last season with the same amount of attempts. And if that's the case, then he's more in the high-end QB2, low-end QB1 range, rather than the low-end QB2. I think he was QB19 or 20 last season. I'm not necessarily a big Mohamed Sanu fan from a real football standpoint, but I think that he still brings something to that offense that Roddy White didn't have, just because Roddy White really slowed down last season. And obviously, you're associating a guy like Matt Ryan with one of the best wide receivers in the game in Julio Jones. So I think all of that combined really makes Matt Ryan an interesting option. I'm not one to necessarily target him in a one quarterback league, because I think that you can probably use the waiver wire in most leagues to come up with a performance, a Frankenstein, if you will, that's going to match what Matt Ryan can do. But if you're in a two quarterback format or a best ball format, I really do like him this season.
Matt Ryan had a sixth round ADP last year.
Crazy.
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 Crazy. How are you? I struggle, besides he's a rookie, I struggle to find negatives on Ezekiel Elliott. Where do you have him ranked among running backs, and can you come up with some other negatives beyond just he's a rookie?
It's pretty tough to. My model spit him out, I think, as like a running back 7 or 8, which is lower, to be fair, than what a lot of folks where a lot of folks have him at. I think the fear really is just usage. Like, if I think that it's easy right now in June and July for coach speak to really take over. And they've already talked about him seeing 300 plus carries this season and so on, but you don't know how that translates. And I know that goes back to him simply being a rookie. We don't know exactly how it translates. I think that the Darren McFadden injury matters, because if there's anything to knock Zeke, it's going, not that I don't, it's when you go from college to the NFL, you always have to question or wonder how they're going to work in the passing game. I know that he's probably one of the best run blocking running back prospects we've seen in a really long time. So that's definitely a plus. But when Lance Dunbar, who clearly has some sort of role in an offense as their primary pass catching back, he's obviously hurt though, which is not good news. Darren McFadden last season took over that Dunbar role when Dunbar went down, but now Darren McFadden's not healthy. So I think it's really coming around to making Zeke an even more attractive option, and I bumped him up a little bit just because he should be getting that passing down work. I think honestly the thing that you would have to question simply is just touchdowns. It's just what they do in the red zone. If they utilize Dez like we know that they can utilize Dez, and if someone can step up and really be that number two for them, then you have to question a little bit what his touchdown upside would be. But at the same time, we're really picking and choosing, because there's not a lot of depth even at the high end portion of the running back position. So I can't really fault many people if they want to have Zeke as their number one running back. I still think Le'Veon Bell is the guy, even though he has the question marks surrounding his health, just because we know what his upside is, and he could when he is healthy, he's arguably the best player in fantasy football, but I can't fault anyone for having Zeke that high.
And this will be my last question. I sometimes go on podcasts and people ask me open-ended questions, and it's kind of difficult sometimes to come up with an answer right off the top of my head. So I understand if you need a second here, but are there any players in fantasy right now that you can think of that you would just completely avoid, based on ADP, based on expectations for the upcoming season? Could you give me like one or two guys that you're not going to touch at all this year?
Yeah. So, I mean, just doing drafts already and looking at kind of my portfolio, if you will, of guys that I've drafted and not drafted, someone that comes to mind is Kevin White. I think that a lot of people are super, super excited about his potential, but just given the way that I draft, I'm going to look at the downside as well. And I think the downside is kind of scary just because we don't know. And just given where he's going, I mean, we're essentially looking at a rookie wide receiver who didn't play last season. And in NFL 10s and in those sort of leagues, he'll go as high as the fifth round at times. I think the thing to remember with Chicago is that their pass run did drop last season. And I think that ideally what they want to do in that and a John Fox coach team is run the football and play good defense. Hopefully, if their defense does take a step forward and their running game does get off the ground a bit, then I think that there's not going to be as much volume as folks think for a guy like Kevin White. And a lot of that, too, has to do with the way that people view, I think at least, the way people view what happens when a player is removed from an offense. So obviously Martellus Bennett's out of that offense. He had 80-plus targets. And I think that people think, oh, those 80-plus targets are going to be spread around to other players. But I think Zach Miller is actually a really intriguing late-round tight end option because I think he can take on most of that volume. So if that's the case, there's not that much room to go around because we know Alshon's going to eat and he's going to gobble up a lot of targets. And as a result, Kevin White might not have as much volume as what folks think. He's a very, very high upside play. Don't get me wrong. Part of his realm of possibilities and part of his ceiling is that he could be a solid wide receiver too. I just have avoided him for the most part in drafting.
JJ, fantastic stuff once again. The numbers you have, the regression stuff, it's amazing. Any NFL teams checking out what you guys got at Number Fire?
Yeah, I mean we get some interest. There's a lot of stuff that we can certainly provide. We have a really cool net expected points metric that we use a lot to measure kind of the real impact. Because at the end of the day, I think that there's a lot of noise with traditional stats, and I'm the first person to admit it. So hopefully what we do at Number Fire will kind of show people the light that metrics aren't all that bad when it comes to football. And we really do combine both the metrics and the film side to make it all one cohesive product.
Thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
By the way, I love the fact that we've been doing this podcast now. This is year 3, and we still haven't changed that to make it a different sounder for if they actually want to ask Evan a question. We're still just using the one from the Ross Tucker Football Podcast because, yes, we are that lazy. And Brian is that unprofessional, quite frankly, is what it really comes down to. Anyway, here's what matters. You can always email us your question, ross@rostucker.com. Give us your fantasy question. This one, Evan, comes to us from Christian, who would prefer that we don't use his last name in case his league mates are listening. He said, "Greetings, gentlemen. I used the Amazon button on rostucker.com and updated my iTunes review. This question is for the Fantasy Feast podcast. I'm in an auction league with my college buddies. This is the 20th year for the auction league. This year, I was thinking about pursuing a stars and scrubs theory. Only this year, my scrubs would be all guys returning from injuries. My thinking is that the money I'd save on guys like Jordy Nelson, Jamal Charles, Justin Forsett, Mark Ingram, Tyler Eifert, etc., would leave me more money to pursue players like Julio, etc. Your thoughts on this strategy would be greatly appreciated. I guess my first question, Evan, would be, how does he know that all those scrubs, the guys coming off of injuries, are really going to be that cheap?
Ross, I totally wasn't listening.
Got it. You want me to repeat it? You ready?
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. Yeah.
So he wants to basically, in an auction league, pick up Jordy Nelson, Jamal Charles, Forsett, Ingram, Eifert, guys like that, to save money so he can go after guys like Julio. He wants to know what you think of buying up a bunch of guys coming off injury on the cheap.
Oh, okay.
Do you care to answer him?
I'm trying to think of a good answer.
Okay. Well, we've got all day, so just take your time.
I mean, I think he's going to be surprised at how much those guys go for. I don't know if those guys are going to be as cheap as he thinks. I think Eifert might be pretty cheap, but I mean, I think it's a solid strategy in theory. I mean, I would rather, you know, evaluate as best I can each player in that group rather than just, you know, trying to do, you know, come up with a blanket strategy. Oh, I'm going to buy all these guys coming off injury. I mean, I think Jamal Charles is going to be expensive in the auction. I think it makes sense. You know, we'll see if it works out. Auctions, you got to think quickly. You have to be willing to adjust your strategy. You may go in with a certain strategy and you come out of it and you didn't even apply the strategy, you know? But yeah, I mean, going in, I think it's better to have a strategy than to not have a strategy. Just be willing to be flexible. I think that's probably the case with most fantasy drafts. You know, if the board doesn't fall the way that you expect, you got to be willing and able to adjust. And I think that's most certainly, maybe even more so, the case in an auction.
Yeah, and you know what? If he can get those guys for good value and on the cheap, then go for it. I'm with you though. I don't know how cheap guys like Jordy Nelson and Eifert and et cetera are really going to be. That'll do it for this week's Fantasy Feast Eaten podcast. Congratulations once again to Mike Ivanich. I don't know. He's from Raleigh, North Carolina, Mike. Congratulations on getting in the MFL 10 league. It's crazy easy. Just an iTunes comment and rating, and then send us any sponsor confirmation, anything. Tuckheads.com or Amazon or PayPal or any of the sponsors over at rostucker.com, and you have a great chance to get in. Looking forward to seeing who gets in next week and who emails us, because they want in on the MFL 10. A free chance to not only beat Evan's butt, but to get a free $100. What's wrong with that? I'm stuffed. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now because it's awesome. I mean, everything about the experience is top-notch. But what's really cool that a lot of people don't know is they do used cars as well. I mean, there's over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So you can get the same awesome experience connecting with a local certified dealer or using the TrueCar website, the TrueCar app, checking out the TrueCar pricing curve, which I love, which shows you the high end, the low end, and where most people are buying similar vehicles, all for pre-owned cars in addition to new cars. TrueCar users save an average of just about $3,300 off the MSRP, which is awesome. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, make sure you visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.